On Tuesday, July 16th at 10 p.m., Sugar in My Bowl remembers trumpeter, bandleader, composer, and trendsetter Roy Hargrove with first-time filmmaker Elion Henry. We'll also hear remembrances from former Sugar guest Mark Carey. That's Tuesday, July 16th at 10 p.m., right here on WBAI New York, 99.5 FM, and WBAI.org on the web. Listening to WBAI New York, 99.5 FM and WBAI.org on the web. Sugar in My Bowl's name of this program. My name's Joyce Jones, and the focus of this evening will be band leader, composer, trendsetter, Roy Hargrove, as we speak to first-time filmmaker Elion Henry and hear remembrances from pianist Mark Carey, and also a last-minute addition, Spike Willner, owner and manager of Smalls Jazz Club. Stay tuned. This is WBAI New York, 99.5 FM and WBAI.org on the web. Sugar in My Bowl, starting now.
Maybe I can fix things up so they'll go. What's the matter, Daddy? Come on, save my soul. I want some sugar in my bowl. I ain't fooling. I want some sugar.
Hi, my name's Joyce Jones, and I'm on the line with...
Elian Henry.
Elian Henry, thank you so much for joining Sugar in My Bowl, and I really appreciate your being available to discuss the film that you're doing on Roy Hargrove.
Yes.
Have you titled it yet?
Right now, the title that we are working with is Hargrove.
So, what was the nucleus of the creation for this film? What inspired you to approach Roy Hargrove as a subject?
Well, Roy and I had been friends for many, many years. I had known him since about 89 or 90, and we had also worked together. I was an event producer, and he played at several events for me throughout the years. And so we had developed a good friendship, and in the summer of 2016, when he was in Los Angeles, I asked him if I could do a documentary about his life. I had been working in the documentary field since about 2013. And I just realized during the work I was doing that I had a unique access to Roy, and I knew that he was one of our greats and that his story would need to be told. And so I thought I should do it. And that's kind of how it came about.
What was your process in mapping out how you would film his story?
When I asked him, like I said, it was the summer of 2016 when I first asked him if I could do the film. And at that point, he and I kind of began fleshing out the idea together of how we would approach that. And so we had several conversations throughout the next few months about what we were going to do, how we would go about it, and the kind of access I would need to his life and things like that. Because Roy's a very, very private person, and it's not easy for him to open up and let cameras in and let people be around him. And so it was a process to get there. And then aside from that, it was also a process for me to raise the initial funds to begin shooting, to write a treatment, to identify investors who might support me, because I didn't have the resources to make a movie on my own. And so that was a process over the next 18 months that eventually led to January 2018. Roy comes to Los Angeles, and I raise my first money, and we shoot our first interview and B-roll to kick off the filming of the documentary. Thank you.
You mentioned a treatment. Could you describe what that entailed?
Yeah, it's interesting now when I look at that treatment because I wrote that in 2017, really. And so now it's changed a bit. Obviously, the story has changed. We didn't know Roy was going to pass away at the time. But it was about the story of his life and also the story of kind of how he was living in the present, because one of the things that attracted me to wanting to tell the story is because Roy was very sick and he was getting dialysis like 3 or 4 times a week and also traveling around the world playing the horn, the trumpet, which is such a physically rigorous and mentally rigorous instrument to play.
Sure, that had to be rather stressful on him, on his immune system.
It was amazing. To me, I was like, if there was some kind of quantum consciousness that he was able to like transcend his physical reality and play at the level that he was playing. I mean, it was incredible. I wanted to capture that. I was like, how is he doing this? Mm-hmm. And it was true. I mean, when we went on the European tour with him last summer for 3 weeks and covered him doing all the festivals, it's like me and my crew, we're like healthy, fit,
mm-hmm.
you know,
right.
And we were wiped out at the end of that. And here's Roy traveling to different countries, getting dialysis in different countries, playing this way. It was really incredible how he was kind of going on for as long as he did. And yet it was still shocking for us all who are close to him when he died, when it caught up to him, because over the years, there had been so many times, I guess, when he had kind of gotten sick and bounced back. We weren't expecting, I don't think, that wouldn't happen again, but that wasn't the case this time around.
So did you have to re-present the treatment, or did you have to revise the treatment for those who had committed to invest?
No, because basically we had already shot so much with Roy. So I didn't immediately revise the treatment. No, I mean, it was such a blow when Roy died. I was just like, that was a really difficult thing for me, was for a long time I didn't move on it because I just could not rewrite the story in the past tense. I couldn't like even face for a while. It took a few months. And then I was living with the footage, just watching over and over all of this beautiful footage. I mean, we have incredible footage. I shot with Roy in the last year of his life in 8 different cities in 3 different countries.
Wow.
We shot in Los Angeles, Paris, New York. Then we shot in Vienne, France, Perugia, Italy, Sète, France, Sorrento, Italy, Marseille, France. And it's just beautiful. He has a beautiful message. And then it's also aesthetically beautiful, the footage. I mean, just gorgeous. I can't wait to dig in and really edit the film. But eventually, yes, I have been rewriting the treatment, and the story presents itself more and more as we go along. And it's really incredible to watch some of the footage now, because it's almost as if Roy was really directing the story in many ways, ever the band leader. Incredible.
The same, no. You've been with me. try to go away. I do almost anything in my power to make you stay.
So did I hear you mention that you went to Texas, or did you go to Texas?
Yes, okay. Yes, I did go to Texas, and I went to Texas after Roy passed away. That was another interesting thing, because Roy and I were working on that segment together when he was alive. Like, that was one of the next things we were going to produce. I was calling it the Texas Homecoming. That was the treatment that I had written about that segment. That was what I had on my budget that I was submitting to try to raise money to shoot it. And Roy and I were discussing, he was going to come, and we were going to interview his mother. He was going to introduce me to Mr. Hill, his first music teacher. He was going to take me to Booker T. Washington High School, School of the Performing Arts, where Wynton Marsalis discovered him. And, you know, we were kind of working on this segment together, and then he dies, you know. And then I end up going to Texas, and Erykah Badu and some of his high school friends put on this beautiful memorial for him there. And they were calling it Roy's homecoming.
Nice.
Which was just so crazy because we were like calling it that together. So we covered that for the documentary, and we got a beautiful interview with Erica Badu at that time too, who had gone to high school with Roy, which was really great. We got great, beautiful footage in Texas. We got his first music teacher, Mr. Hill, his childhood best friend, Sheldon. We did interviews with his high school sweetheart, Gwena.
Wow. Yeah. That had to be rather interesting going to his high school sweetheart.
I know. Yeah, we got all the way back there. Yeah, no, it was good. Really uncovering his life, you know?
Nice. I've been reading about you, and you've been a producer on films. There was one for Paul Mooney you were a producer on, and there was another one that focused on health.
Yes, Feel Rich.
Right.
The Paul Mooney one is still in development. That's one that I'm still working on.
Okay.
The Feel Rich is one that did come out, and that was executive produced by Quincy Jones and produced by QD3. And yes, I worked on that film in 2013, and that was the experience that made me, I think, want to direct my own film. And so I had actually thought that the Paul Mooney was going to be my directorial debut because we were kind of further along with that one. And I thought Roy was going to be next. Then it was just really strange the way things shifted. There was a pause on Paul Mooney for various reasons. And then Roy came into town and I was able to get the investor to commit to that first shoot. And then it just took off from there. And suddenly Roy was in the front line. And thank God, because he needed to be, obviously.
Sure.
But yeah, the Feel Rich experience, that was a really great experience. And I also worked with the International Documentary Association because I'm an event producer. So I was producing their conferences, and they're kind of the central organization for documentary filmmaking that's been around for like, you know, the past 30 something years. Mm. So I produced this conference, and documentary filmmakers from all over the world would come and have these panels and talk about the issues facing the documentary film community. And I really gathered from that that one of the most important things for documentary filmmaking is access, you know?
Like,
and,
oh, yeah.
And what do you have a unique access to that nobody else, what story can you tell in a way that no one else could possibly tell it, you know? And Roy is that for me. So we came together and we were collaborating on it while he was alive, and not to sound too esoteric or out there, but I still feel like we're collaborating on it now that he's on the other side.
We have no problem with esoteric and out there on this show, so that's all good. And yes, we appreciate ancestors working on their projects.
Yes. Okay, great. I love it.
Listening to WBAI New York, 99.5 FM and WBAI.org on the web. Sugar and Mabel's the name of this program. My name's Joyce Jones. And our guest for this evening is first-time filmmaker Ileon Henry, whose film project focuses on Roy Hargrove, whom we lost last year. Also, pianist Mark Carey sharing his remembrances of being in the city with Roy Hargrove, and we'll hear more from him on the other side of the hour. And we'll hear from Spike Wilner, owner and manager of Small's Jazz Club. What you're listening to in the background is Roy Allen from Roy Hargrove's Big Band 2009 Groovin' High release, Emergence. Roy Hargrove, trumpeter, flugelhorn, composer, and arranger. Before that, you heard Qua, Home, from the RH Factor. Hard Groove is the name of that 2003 Verve Records release. Roy Hargrove, trumpet, flugelhorn, composer. Anthony Hamilton, vocals. Michelle Ndigiocello, electric bass. Jacques Schwartz-Bart, soprano, saxophone, and tenor saxophone. Mark Carey Wulitzer, Reggie Washington, acoustic bass. Willie Jones III, and Gene Lake on drums. Before that, My Shining Hour, from the 1993 Novus Records release of Kindred Souls. Roy Hargrove, trumpet. Gary Bartz, guest alto saxophonist. Mark Carey, piano. Rodney Whitaker, bass. Gregory Hutchinson, drums. Before that, we heard Strasbourg, St. Denis, from Roy Hargrove's Earth Food, 2008 Grooving High release. Roy Hargrove, trumpet, flugelhorn, composer. Justin Robinson, alto saxophone, flute. Gerald Clayton, piano. Danton Bowler, bass. Montez Coleman on drums. And of course, we opened our program with Nina Simone. Our theme, I Want a Little Sugar in My Bowl, from the very best of Nina Simone, Sugar in My Bowl, 1967-1972. Originally recorded in 1967, this is from a 1998 RCA BMG compilation. Stay tuned for more from Elion Henry, Mark Carey, and later we'll hear from Spike Wilner. Sugar in My Bowl continues.
I was going to say that in finding out more about you as a filmmaker, I noticed you mentioned Quincy Jones, and you tend to mention Quincy Jones. Did saying his name help you because of your work with him? Did that open doors for you in any way?
Well, Quincy was a big influence in my early life and early career, and he was one of the first persons I worked for. I worked at his record company. I was a music industry executive. I had a career in the music industry, then I had a career in PR and special events. And so documentary filmmaking is kind of me embarking upon my third career. But yes, in the music industry, I was director of artist development at his company. He really, in my early years, was just such a big influence on me creatively. But in terms of this project, I think having worked for Quincy Jones opens doors. Yeah, for sure. I think it gives you definitely a credibility and something. But for this particular project, so far, my initial investments were actually from people who I had known since, like, childhood best friends who supported me, like relationships that I had had even before Roy. And I've known Roy for 28 years when he died. It's really been put together with a lot of love. this movie. And I feel like that really comes through in the footage and when you see it.
It's as most independent filmmakers, they do tend to source from people who are immediately around them and know big names usually don't make the project easier, you know?
Right. I would love to maybe, you know, Quincy, if you're out there listening and you want to support the project, I would love to tap into that.
But I guess more of what I was thinking was not so much him, but whether saying his name helped you with other people who knew of him or of his reputation. And I guess that isn't the case.
Yeah, I guess really it's Roy's name that's been carrying this. The great Sonny Rollins did an interview, you know. Because that's who Roy is, and that's what he meant to the music. I also have interviews with, I mentioned Erykah Badu, Mos Def did an interview, Questlove did an interview, Chucho Valdez, Mark Carey, and Antonio Hart, and Frank Lacey and Christian McBride, they've all done interviews. Roy's widow, Ida Brandis Hargrove, did an interview. So I have a lot of great interviews already. And really, I'm trying to, at this point, raise money to edit the film and complete the film.
Right.
Mark Carey. Hello.
Hi, Mark.
Hey, Sister Jones. Yeah, I'm getting ready to go on airplanes. Glad we did connect. Going to the North Sea Jazz Festival with Blackout.
Mark Carey, thank you so much for being a part of this conversation about Roy Hargrove.
Oh, indeed.
I spoke to Ilion Henry, so I thought I would talk to a former sugar guest who actually had a relationship with Roy Hargrove. Tell me about your introduction to Roy Hargrove.
Well, I heard Roy when he got on the scene, when he got to New York, and at the time I was playing with Betty Carter, so his name was pretty prevalent on the scene. Like at the Blue Note, there was a jam session hosted by Justin Robinson and Eric Lemon and a bunch of Queens cats, and I used to go down and hit at the session. So one night I went down and Rodney Kendricks was there, and he suggested that Roy and I hook up and play together. So he got me to the bandstand, and Roy and I played, and that was a moment that we realized we were kindred spirits. We were hearing quite a bit of the same elements in the music and going for that sound. So I love comping behind Roy. That was kind of our love affair. I love his compositions and to see him in his element and be a part of it, develop music with him. So that was the adventure.
Tell me about the jam sessions, since you had met at a jam session. That seems to have been part of both you and Roy Hargrove's development as musicians in the city.
Oh, yeah. I think that's a functional part of how you learn the language and the etiquette of the music. Generally speaking, at the time I grew up, you had veterans that would host the jam session, which would give it quite a bit of direction and shape. But things have changed into different ways of doing things. But at the time we were going to jam sessions, it was important that you show progress. So that was how you basically let people know you were here. And also you learn who the players were. It was a very much a social hang as much as a place to be seen and heard by those out doing the work. At the time, there were tours, there were bands that you could actually join or have hopes of joining. Blakey's band, Betty's band, Abby's band, Arthur Taylor, Clifford George's big band. You might end up in Carmen McRae's band. At the time I was growing up, there was a lot of cats here. You might end up on a set with Branford or Winton or Wallace Roney or Cindy Blackman. It was, and it still is, an important part of the culture.
Right. As a matter of fact, you're involved in and have been for quite some time, although it's been in different locations. Presently, there's one at Smoke. You have a Harlem Sessions.
When I can't make it, Johnny's a man, you know. They just bring Johnny. It used to be his night.
Do you want to tell the listeners about those?
Oh, yeah. The Harlem Sessions is really about getting down to the root of the music and developing a community ensemble. Basically, it is a jam session. We have a menu that we curate every week. Expounded upon, shall I say. But it's a lot of B-sides. It's a lot of the music that the actual players wrote, not the stuff that they covered, you know, and then some of the great covers that are in the American Songbook. But also we get into the players and the composers from the Black African diaspora. And we try to get into as much of the indigenous music as possible through the session. So I've brought a lot of music to the table from musicians like Monk, Gary Bartz, Duke Ellington, Jackie McLean, Walter Bolden, Abby Lincoln, Betty Carter. Some of their compositions are very important to be new standards. They actually deal closer to the time that we're in now. And also, I play my peers' music. I encourage that. Oftentimes, you have a lot of kids that are very much into a set of songs that they probably were supposed to learn at school. Most of them are very good songs. It's just that a lot of these songs have been played, so we need to set a new sound, that's all. So I'm just setting a new stage, that's all.
This is WBAI New York, 99.5 FM and WBAI.org on the web. Sugar and My Bowl is the name of this program. My name's Joyce Jones. Our guest for this evening, Ilion Henry, filmmaker of Hargrove, pianist Mark Carey, and later we'll hear from Spike Wilner, the owner of Smalls Jazz Club. In the background is He Who Hops Around from Mark Carey's 1995 Enja Records release, Carry On. Mark Carey, piano, composer, Roy Hargrove, trumpet, Ron Blake, tenor saxophone, Dwayne Berno, bass, and Dion Parson on drums. Before that, we heard Careyisms from Roy Hargrove's 1992 release, The Vibe, on Novus Records. Roy Hargrove, trumpet, composer, Mark Anthony Carey on piano, Antonio Maurice Hart, alto saxophone, Rodney Thomas Whitaker on bass, and Gregory Hutchinson on drums. Stay tuned for our On the Bandstand segment with our associate producer Hank Williams, and more from Ilion Henry, Mark Carey, and Spike Wilner, as we remember Roy Hargrove, right here on WBAI New York, 99.5 FM and WBAI.org on the web. Sugar in My Bowl continues.
Good evening, jazz fans. This is Hank Williams, and welcome to On the Bandstand for July 16th, but don't go anywhere. Joyce Jones will be back in a few minutes for another hour of Sugar in My Bowl with tonight's guest, Elian Henry, director of Hargrove, a documentary film in development on the late trumpeter Roy Hargrove. But this segment features area listings of current and former guests so you can see them live. And we start this week with pianist Vijay Iyer, who leads an ensemble at the Village Vanguard through the 21st of July, with Graham Haynes on cornet. Drummer Terry Lynn Carrington leads an ensemble at Grant's Tomb in a free outdoor concert, and that's part of the Jazzmobile series, and that's on July 17th. Pianist Harold Mayburn leads a trio at Smalls in a late set on the 17th. Trombonist and seashellist Steve Teray leads a quintet at Smoke from the 18th through the 20th. Saxophonist Lakeisha Benjamin is at the Carrymore Jazz Festival playing the music of John Coltrane on the 20th. Pianist Mark Carey's Harlem Session series continues with late Saturday night sets at Smoke on the 20th and 27th. Poet Abiodun Oyewole is at Lincoln Center's Damrosch Park with The Last Poets for a free outdoor performance, and that's part of the Lincoln Center Out of Doors Festival on the 24th. Bassist Mimi Jones is at Smalls in an after-hours set on the 25th. Looking a little further ahead, bassist Charnette Moffett leads a trio at Jazz Forum Arts in Tarrytown, New York on the 28th. Lastly, poet Sonia Sanchez is at Hearst Plaza for the annual La Casita Poetry event at the Lincoln Center Out of Doors Festival on the 27th and at the Pregonis Theater in the South Bronx on the 28th. That's all for this week. If you missed anything, full listings are on our blog. Go to sugarinmybowl.org and click the link for the blog, where you'll also find reviews, features, and jazz news, and Sugar is spelled S-U-G-A. Playlists and audio from this and previous shows are also on the website. If you're on Twitter and Facebook, look for us there too, where we'd appreciate likes, tweets, and shares with your friends. And if you really like what we do, please help the station stay on the air by pledging whatever you can and consider becoming a WBAI buddy with a monthly pledge. The support WBAI link on the Sugar in My Bowl website has details, and we're grateful for any help you can give the station. This is Hank Williams signing off. With our new weekly schedule, we'll be back on air next Tuesday night at 10 p.m. and have updated event listings online. Either way you connect, we'll see you next time on the Bandstand.
Friday, July 19th at 7 p.m. at the People's Forum, 320 West 37th Street between 8th and 9th Avenue, there will be a welcome home reception for Janine and Janet Africa, who both served 41 years of wrongful incarceration in a Pennsylvania state prison. Both Janine and Janet will be speaking, and there will be a special guest performance by Grammy and Oscar-nominated Impact Repertory Theater. There will be a light supper and additional performers and speakers, including Mamiya Abu-Jamal, who is sponsoring this event. For further details, call 212-330-8029. That's 212-330-8029.
Hi, this is Charnett Moffett. You're listening to WBAI, New York, 99.5 FM, and WBAI.org on the web.
I understand that Roy Hargrove had sessions at one point.
I'm not familiar with his sessions. I know he's done quite a bit. He might have done some spots, you know, open stage, but generally Roy goes to jam sessions.
My name is Spike Wilner. I'm a jazz pianist, and I'm also the owner and manager of Small's Jazz Club and Mesro Jazz Clubs, two venues that Roy would play.
In talking to the filmmaker for the Roy Hargrove film, I spoke to Mark Carey, and as we were talking, we talked about jam sessions. And I was of the understanding that Roy Hargrove either led a jam session at Small's or was involved in jam sessions at Small's. Could you speak to that, please?
Yeah, sure. Well, Roy was a fixture on the scene at Small's, and he was there on almost every given night or any night that he would be in town and not working somewhere out of town. He'd usually roll in pretty late. I'm talking about like 1 a.m. or something, and always stay till the doors closed. And that's when we had our after-hour sessions, so he would always play. He was a man of very few words, so he would just hang out, maybe sit in the back in the green room where the musicians were, and have a cigarette, and then maybe come out to play some tunes. But when he played, he would just play with whoever was there. He never cared who was in the band, and if he felt the need to instruct one of the other musicians, he would just very clearly do that. Take the bass, take the piano, take the drums. He could do any of that and just show them exactly what he was trying to get going there. So the answer is that it wasn't a formal thing in the sense of like he was officially booked as a show, but he was there pretty much on a nightly basis. And Roy and I had been friends for a long time. I've known Roy since our college days, actually. So I've been aware of him for a long period of time and got the privilege to play with him quite a bit as well. And yeah. We miss him.
Thanks so much, Spike. I really appreciate your being available at such short notice.
No worries.
He went to a couple of your sessions, right?
He went to quite a few.
Yeah, yeah.
Roy would show up wherever I played. So if he wasn't on the road and I was on stage, he'd be hitting the stage.
Wow.
He always had a free ticket. Somehow he knew all my music all the time. No matter which way I went, he just was intuitive. He listened. He could learn on the spot. Mm. So he knew how to be involved. You know, which is really the real lesson when you talk about Roy. He's a real communicator. He understood the language of music, not just from a theoretic point, but from a very organic point. And not to mention his depth in hearing sound and hearing the quality of chords and the shape of the harmony and the movement. You know, he could hear all of that stuff and he understood rhythm. That's what he liked about me, rhythm. I've heard him say that, you know, which is very important to the music. A melody's nothing without rhythm, so that should be lesson number one.
Cool. I don't know if that answers the question of what is most memorable about your time with Roy Hargrove. Does that answer that question?
There's so many memorable things. I don't think I could even answer that question because every day something new pops up. Some of the things about Roy that are most memorable are he's a devout musician, you know, and he would compose all the time. Mm. You know, I have many compositions of his that he wrote right here in his handwriting, right in front of my face.
Wow.
And I have a library of the guy's music. Everyone I play with, I keep the book, and Roy's book is stacked.
Wow.
Yeah, he was an amazing friend. I think the most memorable thing is that we use very little words to express ourselves to each other. It's very much about the music. And the time we spent was always spent developing something. We had a ball doing it, too. So it wasn't just business. We had fun doing business, you know. Mm.
So what would you like everyone else to remember about Roy Hargrove?
I'll quote him. Roy said that he wanted people to know that when they listen to him, that he wanted them to feel good. And everyone playing music has the power, just like we are on this phone right now. My message is coming through that signal that's carrying it. That's what the music is for us. And I think his mantra was trust and love and empathy and the desire to elevate this whole thing called jazz and all the musicians in it. I think that was what Roy left for me.
Well, thank you so much, Mark Carey. I appreciate this time that you spent to contribute to this program.
It is my pleasure. I'm so happy to be a part of it. And anything else you need from me, let me know.
All right. Thanks so much.
Thank you so much. All right.
Peace.
his tired footsteps, climbing up the stairs. Company. Whispering beside me when I say my prayer. Me is travelers journeying together to the promised land. But old man Sorrow's marching all the way with me, telling me I'm old now since I lose my man, since I lose my man, since I lose. Telling me I'm old now since I lose my man. Ah.
playing all night long. Buy me in the bed. Telling me the same thing. Morning, noon, and evening. That I'm all alone. Since my man is telling me the same thing, morning, noon, and evening, that I'm all alone now, since my man is dead, my man is dead.
We're definitely going to get to how you're going about raising the money, but there are a couple of things that I want to ask you before we get there.
Okay.
You mentioned some of the people that you selected to interview. Why did you choose them? That's part A of that question.
Okay. So this movie, Roy is really telling his own story in
right.
his own
right.
words. And so Roy directed me to who I should interview.
Okay.
You know, I'm taking Roy's lead on all of this. And there was an interview that we did in Set France. It's one of my favorite interviews I did with him. I have so many favorite interviews with him because they were all good throughout the whole entire
sure.
year. But in this particular interview, I mentioned to you one of the things I was working on with him when he passed away. There were two more segments we were going to shoot, and one of them was the Texas Homecoming. The
right.
other one was the Dream Team Jam Session. That's what we were calling that segment.
Oh, wow.
And I did this interview with him, and I asked him basically if there were no restrictions and no barriers and no limitations, management getting in the way, schedules getting in the way, money getting in the way, whatever, and your ideal set of musicians to have the dream team jam session with, who would it be? And he named these musicians to me in this interview. And so I set out to interview some of these musicians, as well as other musicians who Roy just talked about in other interviews that we did, who he said made an impact on him or in the stories he told, because ultimately when I'm editing the film, I'm going to use people to have Roy also talking about having a relationship with as well, right?
Fairy tales are told to children, tucked away to rest. Stories for the trusting spirit, fantasized in jest. By the time we learn to reason, life has lost its cheer. And now and then I wonder at the fate of being here. There's a song of hallelujah, there's a dance of moving things. It begins and then it's ended, it's a drama happening. There's a side that is eternal, and a lonely, lonely song, and a love that is abiding, and a torch to carry on. In the twinkling of a moment, there are dreams that fade away, and you never know what's coming as you live from day to day. There are stars that shine and sparkle, there's a moon that pulls the sea. There is love forever after, and there's love for you and me.
Mark Carey, Antonio Hart, Ralph Moore, Rodney Whittaker, Kareem Riggins were the musicians who Roy said he would have in his Dream Team jam session. And so I kind of started following that course originally to pursue interviews. And I was able to secure some people are more responsive than others. And so I got the interviews that I got so far. And I do want to do another New York round of interviews. I'd really like to get Herbie Hancock still. He's someone who was really important to Roy. They won a Grammy together.
Okay.
For directions and music.
You're listening to WBAI New York, 99.5 FM and WBAI.org on the web. Sugar in My Bowl's the name of this program. My name's Joyce Jones. What you're listening to in the background is The Poet from Herbie Hancock, Michael Brecker, Roy Hargrove, the Grammy-winning Directions in Music, celebrating Miles Davis and John Coltrane. This is a 2002 Verve release. Herbie Hancock piano, Michael Brecker tenor saxophone, Roy Hargrove trumpet, John Petitucci bass, Brian Blade drums. Before that, story-wise, from Abby Lincoln's 2013 Verve release, A Turtle's Dream. Abby Lincoln vocals, Roy Hargrove trumpet, Jules Leroux tenor saxophone, Rodney Kendrick piano, Christian McBride bass, Victor Lewis on drums. Before that, My Man Is Gone from Shirley Horn's 1998 Verve release, I Remember Miles. Shirley Horn piano, vocals, Roy Hargrove trumpet, Al Foster, Steve Williams drums, Ron Carter, Charles Abels on bass. And before that, we heard our On the Bandstand segment with associate producer Hank Williams. We also heard from pianist Mark Carey and manager and club owner Spike Wilner. We'll hear more from filmmaker Ileane Henry as she shares about her upcoming project Hargrove, right here on Sugar in My Bowl on WBAI New York, 99.5 FM and WBAI.org on the web.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Excellent. Well, that could definitely happen.
Yeah.
When they're putting it out there,
so.
It's going to happen. It's definitely going to happen.
It's going to happen. Yeah. Sure. Yeah. If Herbie saw the clip of Roy talking about him, the footage I have, it would melt his heart. I'm sure he would want to do an interview. We'll see.
So you indicated that there's another round of interviews that you want to do. Is there something that you want to achieve by having talked to the people that you talked to?
You know, it's interesting because it's like the filmmaking process. I don't even know. I'm interviewing these. I'm just getting the full scope of the story.
Right.
And I don't know what will make it into the final 90-minute feature. I know that where I'm at right now is that I don't want it to be a talking heads piece because I think that's boring, you know. And we have so much beautiful B-roll that we shot in Europe. So I know I'm going to be using the interviews, but it's not going to be just interviews, you know.
Right.
But I'm just trying to accomplish because even what doesn't make it into the actual 90-minute feature is still informing what makes it into that 90-minute feature.
Right.
And I guess what I'm trying to do is just get the most full scope of the story I can. And Roy told me everything that he told me. We talked and talked and talked and talked and talked. And his last year, he gave me my marching orders. And now I'm just kind of following them through until I get to the finish line.
Once you get all the interviews that you want to get, what is the next step?
Well, even before I get all of the interviews that I want to get, I immediately want to start editing. That's really what my focus is on now, even more so than the interviews. I need to raise the money to edit the film because it can be up to a 20-week process to edit a feature-length film. And then I also have to deal with music license, you know, those kinds of things. So I have more to get through before it's done. And I am trying to do a big fundraising campaign and hopefully get the support of the jazz community, writing grants, reaching out to individual givers, just really trying to leave no stone unturned in terms of how I can raise funds to get to the finishing line with this.
So what can we, as everyday people who loved Roy Hargrove and really want to see this work actualize, what can we do?
Well, I have fiscal sponsorship through Film Independent, and Film Independent is a nonprofit organization that supports independent filmmaking, and they basically, through their program, they set up a nonprofit fundraising model for documentary filmmaking. And if people make a donation to the Hargrove film of any amount through Film Independent, it's a tax write-off, and you can go online. There's a donation page. They will send you an email right away for your records to include with your taxes. And that's one way to help. And if you can't donate financially, another way to help is by spreading awareness and maybe going to the Hargrove Facebook page or Instagram page and sharing a post and letting your friends and followers know that there's a film and that they can support by going to Film Independent and making a donation.
So I'm looking at, it's really sort of complex. It's like filmindependent.org/programs/fiscal-sponsorship/Hargrove, which is a mouthful, but we will make this. But we will make this link available on our Sugar in My Bowl page. And I suspect you'll also make it available on the Facebook page as well.
Yes, it's available on the Facebook page. It's available on the Instagram page.
Right.
There's a link in the bio that you can click on. And there's also a mailing list that you can join with a newsletter for updates about the film on the Facebook page as well. So definitely go to the Facebook page and like it and join it.
And the Instagram page.
And the Instagram page, yes. We're building our social media community.
Start something nice.
in addition to going to film independent, does this replace other crowdsourcing modes like
Kickstarter,
right,
and GoFundMe?
Exactly.
And that kind of stuff?
Does this replace that kind of?
Well,
activity?
You know, I would think that it could, but I keep running into people telling me you should start a crowdfunding with Kickstarter or GoFundMe. So I'm going to explore doing that because I guess that there's things that they provide like perks and stuff where you can give away things.
Right.
So I think we're going to explore getting into that for sure.
Okay.
You know, it's a slow build right now, and I want to just keep pushing forward and doing whatever is going to help me raise these finishing funds.
But this is a good starting place. The perks will be the film. The perk is the film.
People will get a credit and the thank you when the film comes out. And to have your name on a beautiful cultural timepiece, it's going to be there for the ages about our beloved Roy Hargrove. I mean,
well, there you
have
it.
That's a good thing to make a donation towards.
I have a couple of questions, a few more questions to ask you. Working with Sam Pollard as the creative advisor, what is his role in helping you here?
So Sam Pollard was somebody I mentioned to you that I produced these conferences for the International Documentary Association.
Right.
And that's how I met Sam Pollard, because he was doing one of the panels. And it was a very popular panel. I noticed that all the filmmakers, it was one that you had to sign up for. And so many filmmakers signed up that there was an overflow and everyone couldn't go to his. It was like a master. So I really realized, I'm like, oh, who's this brother? You know what I mean? I realized how important he was in the documentary filmmaking community. And so I also found out that he was like a jazz fan, too. And so I had his contact information from doing this conference, and I just reached out to him. I hadn't even done the first sizzle reel yet, but I was just like trying to put together a picture that would make investors feel comfortable with me as a first-time director. And I kind of knew that it was super important for me to have a cinematographer that was really experienced, an editor that was really experienced, and to have like a mentor or an advisor who had an established track record where people would feel that I was with a team that knows how to get a movie to the end. And so I basically sent out a cold email, because when I produced that conference, I didn't really get to interact with him all that much. I just met him. I handled the logistics and stuff. But I just put Roy Hargrove in the subject line, and he really loves Roy Hargrove. And so he was into helping pretty much from the beginning. He was intrigued by the idea of it. And he's just been someone who I can kind of once in a while call or text or email and ask him questions about different things that I'm facing in the business process, different things that I'm facing in the fundraising process, different things that I'm facing in the creative process. And he's been a really generous resource of knowledge.
We'll be right back.
he really helped me with the first reel too, editing that first piece. It was like I kind of was able to put together a rough cut and send it to Sam, and he was like, I was trying to shrink it down from 16 minutes to 8 minutes, and he's such a master. He's just like, take that, move that, switch that, and I'm like, okay. And then I did. I was like, oh wow, this is great, you know. So yeah, it's been a real honor to get to work with him.
And you're a cinematographer, you mentioned in your list of must-haves, Robert Benavides.
Yeah, Robert Benavides. He did some beautiful, beautiful work.
Now,
wow.
Did he work on the Tribe Called Quest film?
Yes.
Okay.
He did. And I knew him from also like 20 years ago from my music industry days when I was a video commissioner. When I worked at this independent hip hop label and when I worked for Quincy, I was the person who hired the directors and the production companies for the music videos for the artists on the label. So I would oversee the video production. And Rob was a DP on one of my rap videos back in the day.
Okay.
So when I'm racking my brain thinking like, who can I have shoot Roy? Who can I have shoot Roy? Because like Roy's so hard to make comfortable too. You know what I mean? Like, it has to be a real chill vibe for Roy to be comfortable. Non-judgmental, chill, cool vibe. And Rob was perfect. They got on, and he shot Roy beautifully. It's iconic, this footage. I mean, Roy is just, it's gorgeous.
The other person on your list, the editor, have you selected one yet, or you're still, that's coming?
No, I have not selected one. I'm in conversations with a couple of different editors, but it depends also on timing, when I have the money, because there's editors who are available now who, by the time I'm prepared to hire somebody, may not be, or, you know what I mean?
Sure.
So it's all kind of like this thing of coming together, time, money, and availability, but I do have a couple of people who I'm interested in possibly working with. I have not made a final decision on that yet.
We'll be right back. another quick question.
Okay.
Once it is done, do you have like a film festival circuit that you have listed?
Yeah, I do want to enter the festivals for sure. I definitely want to do the festival circuit. And what's interesting is that we haven't even edited the film, and there were like a couple on Instagram that already sent me little notes about it, which is really exciting. But that's also going to be a timing thing. It's like, what time of the year do you finish? What time of the year are you able to submit, you know? And that would determine, I guess, which festival we would maybe premiere in. But I definitely want to do that. Look forward to when we're at that stage. And that's also part of the reason that I'm wanting to build the social media, the online community now, so that we can let people know when that time comes and how they might be able to support then with voting or in other ways.
Excellent. You're definitely veering closer to the finish line. And with the help of folks who are listening now, they will go to Film Independent. Go to Sugar in My Bowl if you don't want to remember. filmindependent.org/program/fiscal-sponsorship/Hargrove. You can go to sugarinmybowl.org and click the link there. Or you can go to Facebook, the Hargrove documentary page, and find the link there. Or you can go to Instagram, look for Hargrove documentary. Well, Elian Henry, thank you so much for joining Sugar in My Bowl. I really appreciate your taking the time to talk about this, because when I saw it, I was like, oh my gosh, I didn't even know it was happening. And so, you know, I was like, I'm sure I'm not the only one. I'm glad you made yourself available so we can share it with the listeners.
Yeah, thank you so much.
And I look forward to seeing the finished product. I want to be right
there. You will be. It will be an auspicious occasion. Bye.
Bye-bye.
You're listening to the closing moments of Sugar in My Bowl. My name's Joyce Jones, and our focus of this evening was Roy Hargrove, as we talked to first-time film director Elian Henry, pianist Mark Carey, and owner and manager of Smalls Jazz Club, Spike Wilner. What you're listening to in the background is Parker's Mood, the title selection from the Roy Hargrove, Christian McBride, Stephen Scott Trio. This is a 1996 release. Roy Hargrove trumpet, Stephen Scott piano, Christian McBride bass. Before that, we heard Bohemia After Dark, the Oscar Pettiford composition. Roy Hargrove and Antonio Hart, The Tokyo Sessions, 1992 Novus Records. Roy Hargrove, trumpet. Antonio Hart, alto saxophone. Yataka Shina, piano. Tomoyuki Shima, bass. Masahiko Osaka, on drums. Before that, the title selection from Strength, from the RH Factor. This is from a 2004 Verve EP. Roy Hargrove, trumpet. Flugelhorn, composer, arranger. Keith Anderson, tenor saxophone. Bobby Sparks, keyboards. Bernard Wright, piano. Reggie Washington, bass. Jason J.T. Thomas, drums. And Renee Newfield, vocals. Before that, Erica Badu, Think Twice, the Donald Byrd composition, from her 2003 Motown release, Worldwide Underground. Erica Badu, vocals, producer. Roy Hargrove, trumpet, vocals. James Poyser, keyboards, producer. And Rashad Ringo Smith, drum programming. Stay tuned. Anne-Marie Hendrickson is scheduled next with Rat Mansion. And Sugar in My Bowl will be back next week. This is WBAI New York, 99.5 FM and WBAI.org on the web. Stay tuned.
Hello, bueno, this is Sonia Sanchez. I urge you to give your generous support to listener-sponsored community radio, WBAI 99.5 FM in New York.